You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
By late last year, 105 of the 192 countries represented at the UN had abolished the death penalty, and those that continue the practice make for strange bedfellows, among them China, North Korea, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Somalia, and the United States. In his book, 13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty, Mario Marazziti, a journalist and member of the Italian Parliament, reflects on what the death penalty looks like today. It is addressed to Americans, actually, and published by Seven Stories Press. I'm very pleased that it has brought Mr. Marazziti to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for the invitation.
In 2013, 41% of U.S. executions took place in Texas alone. From your work on this issue, why do you think that is?
Well, Texas somehow is proud to be Texas. And they like to feel different. But I found out over the years that America was thinking that it is different from the rest of the world, from Europe and so on. And this way of thinking, at the end of the day, is always defeated. So I felt that there is too much culture of guns. I felt that I could not have a lunch in a normal way because all the people around me were with guns in their pockets. And
You're talking about Texas, yeah?
Yes, Texas, Huntsville. So... And I also felt that when I was entering death row and then I was going out, there was some injustice that I could feel alive and they could not be alive anymore later.
You went to Huntsville to visit somebody who was on death row?
Yes, I had some friends. One, Dominic Green, was the first person on death row that friends of mine started to be pen pals, and through him, I entered death row, and I went to visit him. And after many, many thousands of miles, the administration told me, no, you cannot meet him, after giving me the permission in advance. I was a little upset. Then I discovered that on that week, there was one day for the media, and I hired a crew, paid $1,000, and with the TV crew, I could enter the death row. And then I started to talk to my friend. And that was a completely different story.
How did you have a friend on death row?
Because these people, like Dominic Green, sometimes write letters to foreign media trying to find friends and understanding. He was told that there were sensitive people in Italy, and two Italian media published this letter. A friend of mine started to be pen pal. Through her, I started to know him.
You are you have a group called the Community of Sant'Egidio, which argues that capital punishment is something to be overcome. In fact, you compare it to slavery. But is that how he heard about you?
Well, no, he did not know about us. He just sent a letter, mm-hmm. like in a message in a bottle through the ocean. But the Community of Sant'Egidio has a record of peacemaking. We brokered the peace accord in Mozambique after a civil war. And I worked with Nelson Mandela to broker the peace accord between Hutus and Tutsi in Burundi. But the death penalty was the meeting with an individual man. And I felt that it was summarizing all the offenses to human dignity.
Texas stopped giving last meals on death row in 2011. Why?
Maybe it was to...
To punish the prisoners even more? Does it really matter?
There are so many stupid things. One, I think they had problems also to find the right chef. But give you an idea, there are rules to enter death row in Huntsville or in Livingston. And you cannot have a tank top, but you can have a T-shirt. You cannot have sandals, but you must have shoes. But then there was another journalist. It was, a colleague of Christiana Mampur with high heels. She was much more sexy than me if I had sandals. So, but she could stay, and I could not have sandals.
Last night at 6:33 p.m., Kent Sprouse, a man convicted of killing a Texas police officer and a gas station customer, was executed by a new combination of drugs. The method of execution has become a major issue in this country.
I feel guilty Every time I read of a botched execution, because somehow I personally was involved in putting out of the market one of the three drugs, the pentobarbital, the pentotal by Hospira company, because it was produced in Italy. And so I convinced the Italian Minister of Foreign Affairs and of Health to create different sanctions that could create problems to the company if the drug was used not for health, but for death. And that has been the beginning of this problem with the cocktail.
And that was the drug that put people to sleep?
Well, it is supposed to put people to sleep and not to make people feel anything. It's an anesthetic. But studies even before were demonstrating that was paralyzing the face and the body, but it was not clear if the people were without sensibility.
You say in this book you're optimistic about the waning support in the United States for the death penalty, but just yesterday, Oklahoma lawmakers voted to reinstate the gas chamber as a backup execution method to legal injection. Where do you find your optimism? Polls in this country indicate that 6 in 10 Americans are in favor of it, at least when there's a murder involved.
Well, first, I think that if you have to go back to gas chamber or to fire squads like in Utah,
there was also the electric chair.
Yes, and I think you are going step by step back to a barbaric way, and people can be more aware that it is barbaric. I don't think that there is a clean way of executing. But I also think that in this moment, there are many states in America, like Nebraska, like Kansas, other states that are trying to pass bills to repeal the death penalty. I think there is a big change, and we are at the lowest rate of executions over the last 20 years.
And there are a number of states that don't have the death penalty. 32 do. That means that 18 don't anymore. You note in your book that although 63% of white Americans favor it as a punishment for murder, only 36% of African Americans felt the same way in 2013. Why do you think there's such a huge racial disparity?
Why do you think that there is a racial disparity?
Well, I guess it's been argued before the Supreme Court a number of times that a black person is much more likely to be given a death sentence than a white person for the same crime.
An incredible misproportion between colored people and white people. But the problem is also the misproportion is between the one who is marginalized and the ordinary people. I think there is a problem of legal defense.
It's been pointed out that if there's a white victim of a murder, and a black person is the killer, much more likely to get the death sentence than if the killer is white.
I think.
But does it work the other way too? If a black person kills a black person?
Well, a black person has always more. A higher percentage of receiving the death penalty, but I think the relationship, the proportion is 1 to 9.
And you also point out that 76% of U.S. executions in 2010 took place in the South.
Yes, I think that the Bible Belt, maybe restorative justice is something strange, more in the South than in other states of America. I think that retributive justice is very, very strong, and at the same time, I think that there is some relationship between the history of slavery in the South and the follow-up into the death penalty.
Now, first of all, I should tell people my guest is Mario Marazziti. He's written a book called 13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty, and this is written in English, aimed at an American audience. This would not be published in Italy?
This is not published in Italy. This does not exist in Italian. I started to write it, yes, for an American audience, because I think that over 20 years I discovered things that if many Americans know, some of the gray area about the death penalty can change. Sometimes incredible friends, also activists, know only a small angle of the thing. This is why it is 13 ways of looking at the death penalty. From the victim's point of view, from the innocent point of view, from the international point of view.
Many of the countries that still impose the death penalty have repressive governments, and the United States is the only G7 nation on the list. What do you make of the collection of countries that say they use the death penalty as a deterrent for crime?
Well, there is no polls, no study in the world that can show that there is a real relationship between deterrence and the death penalty. There is no relationship between the curve of the homicides and the curve of executions in America and in all the other countries. And there is sometimes the demonstration that if you abolish the death penalty, the rate of crimes could decrease, of terrible crimes. It's not clear if it is related, but let's say Canada. In Canada, it went down instead of going up after the death penalty was abolished. So the problem, I think, is just a culture of death or a culture of life.
It has been pointed out that people do not think, oh, gee, if I pull this trigger, I might get the death penalty as a result. That's not what enters their mind at that moment.
No, but if we think that on every cigarette's package is written, this kills, everyone smokes. Drug addicts know that they could die. Somebody else will die. Or a real man who is part of a gang is acquainted with death. So you and I maybe would be scared to receive death if we do something bad, but not killers.
In the section where you talk about the death penalty as a deterrent, you mention ISIS. How does ISIS fit in?
Well, ISIS is culture of death. They use the death penalty as a show, and this show is to scare people, to invite Muslim people to join, saying that if they do not do what they should do, they would be killed. And at the same time, they exhibit death to create automatic reactions in the West, because they would like retaliation, because retaliation would allow many other Muslim groups to feel that they're under attack. So it's ISIS is exactly culture of death used as a political tool.
And we're horrified in this country by the beheadings, and yet we also execute people.
I don't think that there is so much difference between beheading and the gas chamber.
Although China refuses to provide the numbers, isn't it widely known that they execute the most prisoners every year?
For sure, China has the absolute figures highest in the world for executions. But I would say that China is the country in the world where executions are going down more fast. So if we think that they may be 5,000 every year, we must say that they decreased by 30% over the last 3 years, because the Supreme Court took away from the peripheral courts the power to inflict the death penalty. So I think that there is big change in China.
Iran is in second place, and then Iraq, Saudi Arabia. Amnesty International reports that most of Iran's death sentences are given to drug offenders. Has it cut down on drug abuse in Iran?
I don't think that even in Iran, the death penalty is a real deterrent, for instance, to drug use. But in this moment in the world, drug and terrorism are the two main reasons why the executions take place in the east of the world.
My guest is Mario Marazziti, co-founder of the World Coalition Against the Death Penalty. He is spokesman for the community of Sant'Egidio, a progressive Catholic movement that's devoted to peacemaking and human rights, based in Rome, but also present in 70 countries. He's also a longtime contributing writer to Corriere della Sera, and in 2012 he was elected to the lower house of the Italian Parliament. He's written a book called 13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty. It is published by Seven Stories Press. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Mario Marazziti. His book, 13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty, from Seven Stories Press. You write that your first memory of the death penalty was the Carol Chessman case in 1960, when you were just 8. Why did that case attract worldwide attention?
That guy was his name, Chessman, and he was playing by himself without a lawyer against the state of California for more than 10 years. Then he was defeated and he was executed in the gas chamber. And I remember from having seen the sketches of the gas chamber on the Italian newspapers. I was not reading newspapers at that time. But I can remember that there was a small hole and the pill and the water and the description of how it was working. And I cannot forget that.
One argument against the death penalty is that America has been proven to have a flawed criminal justice system, and not every person's guilt can be established with 100% certainty. Aren't a number of people throughout the United States released each year after having spent years on death row because they were found innocent in the end?
Well, there are now 152 people who were exonerated after spending many years on death row. A person just a few days ago, after 30 years.
Anthony Ray Hinton.
But there are many more that are innocent in American prisons because the DNA project demonstrated, not just for death penalty cases, that about 55%, 60% of the cases of people who have been found innocent were sentenced for robbery or other things on the basis of witnesses, eyewitnesses, and on the basis of confessions. That are the cases in which we think that he is guilty.
Well, we don't always have DNA as a factor in a case. But in the case of Anthony Ray Hinton, the prosecutor had a documented history of racial bias, and it turns out that Hinton was working in a locked warehouse 15 miles away at the time that these two fast food restaurant managers were killed in 1985. Wouldn't that be enough reason to not convict him?
I think it would have been more than enough. The same happened to a friend of mine, Nick Yaris. I write some lines about him in the book, and he was more than 22 years in Pennsylvania death row, and he was innocent, just that. Then when I met him for the first time, I told him, "I'm sorry." And then he said, "Why? I am alive. I was a jerk. I learned many things. I spent more than 8,000 days in prison, but they didn't let them win on me, and I read 6,000 books."
Hmm. Well, some people wind up with PTSD or worse as a result of having lived that long, often in solitary confinement. The facts and figures section of your book has some startling stories. One involves George Stinney, who has the distinction of being the youngest person to ever have been executed in the United States. He was just 14, a young black boy.
I think that revenge is the only reason, because this cannot happen. How can you be free and do the wrong thing when you are 14 and you do not know anything about life?
There's also have been cases like John Paul Penry, the man you visited. He's mentally impaired.
Well, he is the only case in his American history where the Supreme Court for three times reversed the sentence. But when I met him, he told me, "Well, you know, I was given a big, big book. This big book is Webster's. Oh, yes, it contains all the words. The one who wrote it must have known many, many things." This is the guy.
Did he commit the murder?
I don't know. He was arrested while he was going by bicycle, not far from the house where the lady had been stabbed.
Now, in some cases, we know that the person was involved in the crimes. And there are people who might say, "Well, I'd be against the death penalty in many cases, in most cases, but not, for example, in the case of Jokhar Tsarnaev, who, has been found guilty on 32 counts, and we see the video of him actually putting the explosive closer to a child. Another case was the Oklahoma bombing case. Wouldn't it be justified in those cases?
Well, we must remember always that when we execute, when we kill a person, we create new victims, the relatives of that person that is executed, the children of that person, who forever, without having done anything, will be more stigmatized and will ask themselves, what have I done wrong? And in the case of Oklahoma bomber Timothy McVeigh, Bud Welch is the father of one of the beautiful young women that were killed in the attack. And he was full of rage, but he could not heal. But then he met the father of Timothy McVeigh and felt that he was a victim too. And then they became friends. And only friendship and forgiveness started to heal him. I think that we must think these things. We must never be like the killers.
I guess it's just that some people feel in some cases it's so extreme. Timothy McVeigh was executed in 2001, the first federal death penalty carried out since 1963. So it was seen as a special situation. And although people in Boston are largely against the death penalty, I'm not sure that Tsarnaev is going to be spared the death penalty.
I think that if this Chechen young man was to be executed, this would create just more death. This guy was raised in a violent situation, Chechens, in strange things, under the influence of his older brother that for sure put him into a vacuum full of only of death and revenge. And I think that all the Massachusetts society would become a killer if they killed them. So it would not change anything, would not give any life back to the people who lost their life, would not reimburse anyone of the person who lost a limb. But I think that would decide that the two brothers, somehow, who wanted just death, are now winning because they are creating more death.
My guess is Mario Marazziti, co-founder of the World Coalition Against the Death Penalty in 2002, also a spokesman for the community of Sant'Egidio, a progressive Catholic movement that's devoted to peacemaking and human rights. It's based in Rome, but has a presence in 70 countries. He's written a book with the help of Paul Illy. Well, Paul Illy, I guess, wrote the afterword here. It's called 13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty. It's published by Seven Stories Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In Huntsville, which you said you visited, being a prison guard is a respectable and even desirable job, and you profile a guard, Jim Willett. How did he come to his job?
He did not want to become a guard. He wanted to be an economist, but then he found a job. And he thought, for some weeks, I will do this and so on. But then he started to like it. And in Texas, prisons are a big thing. And then step by step, since he was a very good guard, he became the supervisor, the warden of all the Texas system. But the warden has also to supervise the executions, once the executions were reinstated in Texas after, and the first little injection took place in 1982.
What does he say about capital punishment? Because he's seen it up close.
He says that if you take away drugs and alcohol, more than 95% of the people that must be executed would not have to be executed first. Second, he remembered some real young guys and hardly he could sleep afterwards. And when he left his job, he started to strongly oppose the death penalty. He knows what the death penalty is.
And he said that one of the toughest ordeals he had to face was the execution of Gary Graham.
Yes.
Who was he and why was his execution so divisive?
Gary Graham was, let's say, the Black Panthers. So many were convinced that he was accused and sentenced to death just because of political reasons. So, and it created a real split. There was Reverend Jesse Jackson on one side, or let's say the Bianca Jagger, famous people. On the other hand, many people that were saying, well, kill him, kill him, kill him. And it was a fight. It was terrible. And really, it was divisive. But probably it was political.
You also profile the various clergy who work with and attend to death row inmates. What is that work like?
Well, Reverend Pickett, for instance, he followed, accompanied 90 people to die on the very last day of their life. And he had not chosen to be the chaplain of the dead, but the chaplain of the alive people. Then the lethal injection started. At that time, his father was in favor of the death penalty, and he was in favor too. And there was a terrible escape and some hostages taken by death row people, and some of his parish people were killed in a brutal way by these people. So he was, again, was in favor of the death penalty. Then he participated to the protocol of the first lethal injection. And it's something that would deserve a story. And he immediately changed his mind. The one who sees how inhumane is the lethal injection decides to change his mind.
We have very little time, but you are, as I said, a member of Sant'Egidio. Do you have connections to the Pope? Does he have a position on capital punishment?
Well, Pope Francis was really open and spoke openly about it. And he says that now we must do whatever we must, whatever we can to abolish the death penalty. And he visited Sant'Egidio. We feel very close to him.
You're also in the Italian Parliament, where you don't have to vote on these things because Italy has banned the death penalty. All the European nations have.
Yes, but Europe abolished the death penalty step by step because it tasted too much death in the world after the Second World War.
13 Ways of Looking at the Death Penalty is Mario Marazziti's book. It's published by Seven Stories Press. And I thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.